stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palka reporting. Al-Shabaab militants killed in Somali drone strike. At least 8 Al-Shabaab militants were killed in a suspected drone strike on a base near Baladul Amin village. That's a village 120 kilometers northwest of Somalia's capital of Mogadishu. Sources tell VOA that at least 3 junior Al-Shabaab commanders are among the dead. Residents said they heard 3 big explosions when the airstrikes targeted the Al-Shabaab base early on Sunday. Residents also say they believe the strikes were carried out by a U.S. drone, but there's been no confirmation yet from the Pentagon. As fears intensify over terrorist threats in Europe, a cloud of worry hangs over the refugee camps on the continent. In Germany, Syrians say they fear backlash if they're blamed for Islamic State militants' increasingly horrifying campaign. In the wake of the Paris attacks, he said, Syrian refugees in Europe are sometimes feared, and politicians around the world are warning that terrorists may be hiding among the refugees. As the United States is no exception, where highly charged political energies are attempting to keep Syrian refugees out. President Obama addressed the issue at his Kuala Lumpur news conference earlier today.
I'll be as clear as I can on this. Prejudice and discrimination helps ISIL and undermines our national security.
Malian authorities searched Sunday for at least 3 suspects they believe are connected to Friday's deadly jihadist attack on a luxury hotel in the capital of Bamako that killed 19 people. An army commander said 2 gunmen who also were killed in the assault on the Radisson Blue Hotel were armed with assault rifles, explosives, and a large amount of ammunition. One police official said investigators are following several leads in the case and have recovered evidence in the hotel from the more than 7-hour siege. This is VOA News. Now, the United States State Department says it has no information to confirm reports that Islamic State plans to launch more attacks in France, the United States, and elsewhere on Sunday. And their statement came in response to a question about information posted by the online activist group Anonymous, which said it had uncovered information about imminent plots that also included sites in Italy and Lebanon. The group did not provide specific proof, but said it had forwarded relevant information to the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and the Britain Intelligence Agency. One of the supposed targets is a professional wrestling event Sunday night in the southeastern U.S. city of Atlanta. Egyptians are voting on Sunday in the second stage of parliamentary elections, a vote that will produce the country's first legislature in more than 3 years. Tens of thousands of policemen were deployed in Cairo and the 12 other provinces where voting is taking place. Despite the measures, overall turnout is expected to be low, just as it was during the first phase vote, in which participation was around 25%. Iran said on Sunday it has sentenced detained Washington Post journalist Jason Rezaian to an unspecified prison term following his conviction last month on espionage charges. A spokesman for Iran's judiciary announced the sentence on Iranian state television's website, but said it was not finalized. He gave no indication on the length of the term. Mr. Rezaian's lawyer, Leila Hassan, said she had not been informed of the sentence, and the Washington Post had no immediate report on it either. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations signed a landmark agreement today. Steve Herman has more for VOA from Malaysia.
At the signing ceremony, the ASEAN Summit's host, Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak, hailed the establishment of the ASEAN community as a landmark achievement, being realized more than a dozen years after it was first proposed.
Our ASEAN way has guided us and will continue to be our compass as we seek to realize a politically cohesive, economically integrated, socially responsible, and a truly people-oriented, people-centered, and rules-based ASEAN.
Many tariff barriers have already been eliminated among ASEAN states, although many politically sensitive sectors remain protected, such as agriculture, auto production, and steel. Steve Herman, VOA News, Kuala Lumpur.
The so-called Kuala Lumpur Declaration allows for freer movement of trade and capital in an area of 625 million people. The bodies of nearly 100 people have been recovered from a landslide near a jade mine in northern Myanmar. Local officials say more than 100 people remain missing after Saturday's massive collapse in Kashin State. This is Joe Palka reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
In Burundi, we are dealing with a lot of brainwashing and lies that are being spread through social media.
The Burundian government denies news about shootings at the presidential palace in the capital, Bujumbura.
Last Thursday, a group of bandits who called themselves rebels attacked a bus which was on its way to Numuli. Four people were killed and others were wounded.
The South Sudanese National Army dislodges a base used by rebels accused of attacking civilians.
From a strategic point of view, the government will continue to further enhance its efforts to develop underground water resources.
And Ethiopia needs about $250 million in assistance to help relieve food shortage caused by the lack of rain. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A senior advisor to Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza has denied media reports that there were overnight shootings near the presidential palace in the capital, Bujumbura. Media reports quoted residents as saying five people were killed following a gun battle near the presidential palace late Saturday night. But senior presidential advisor Willie Nyamitwe told me that it appears insurgents aiming to create chaos have been engaging in gunfight at night and then spreading rumors on social media platforms, including Facebook and Twitter.
In Burundi, we are dealing with a lot of brainwashing and lies that are being spread through social media. But near the palace, nothing happened. But I believe 3 or 4 days back, a shell, a small shell dropped a bit far. But since it is during the night, it sounds like it was near. So people are trying to sell this, but this is only a lie because the insurgents in Burundi adopted a new strategy that is being used. And this new strategy is to shoot during the night so that ambassadors and journalists who are staying only in Bujumbura can think all Burundi is under fire. And Bujumbura is a small city, so shooting over the night makes a heavy noise.
What is the government doing to ensure that unarmed civilians are protected from these insurgents, as you said?
Now, the disarmament process is going on, and so far it is successful. People were spreading rumors that the government is going to bring in a genocide, that some mass killings will happen if the police go to disarm civilians. But so far everything is going smoothly. The government, the police, with the local administration and some civil society members, and as well as observers from the African Union, they are going to those neighborhoods to disarm the civilians. So all the guns, the weapons are being removed from the civilians' hands. But everything is being done professionally and smoothly. But some civilians now, they prefer to throw their weapons into the streets and they run away. But what is important in our country is to get all these weapons that are killing innocent people. This is what the police is doing, and the government can ensure the international community that everything is being done professionally, and we do hope that this crisis is going to get an end.
How do you think your assurances are being taken by the people of Burundi, some of them who are opposed to the government?
We need to emphasize one fact. All Burundi is at peace. we can assure you that more than 99% of Burundi is at peace. If you go in all the provinces, you'll find Burundians living in a peace way. But in some suburbs, some neighborhoods, it's a very small part. Some persons needed to create an insurgency, but the government is trying to disarm all those civilians. And so far, we can say that killings have decreased. We can assure you that now people are going back in their homes feeling more and more safe. And no one in Burundi needs to hold a gun. All those persons who have guns, who have weapons, they are a kind of terrorists who only want to terrorize the citizens and to kill innocent people. But for sure, in a few weeks, I think this crisis will come to its end.
Some civil society organizations are saying the government is suppressing their activities by freezing their bank accounts. How true is this allegation?
You know, in our country, we've got more than 6,000 social organizations that have been registered. So if one or two are taking part into insurgency, into a plot, those they have to face justice. So those who have seen their bank accounts blocked are some organizations that are accused by Burundi justice to be part of the failed coup of May 2015. But let justice continue its investigation, and at the end, we'll know who is to be blamed or not. But until now, I can assure that out of the 6,000 organizations, maybe three or four organizations are concerned by this measure of blocking their bank accounts.
Willy Nyamitwe is a senior advisor to Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza. He spoke with me from the capital, Bujumbura. The South Sudanese Information Minister says the National Army has dislodged a camp from where rebels have been carrying out violence in parts of the country. Michael Makui says President Salva Kiir and his cabinet received a security report during the meeting that the rebels attacked a passenger bus on Juba Nimule Highway that left three passengers dead and seven others injured. He told me intelligence reports suggest that the armed group uses the UN mission in the country as a cover to attack unarmed civilians.
Last Thursday, a group of bandits who called themselves rebels attacked a bus which was on its way to Numuli. Four people were killed and others were wounded. After that, the SPLA forces, upon hearing of the attack, they went to the site and pursued the rebels. These bandits, they pursued them up to their camp. And on Friday morning, the SPLA stormed the camp and dislodged them. This is what was reported to us in the Council of Ministers meeting, and this is what I reported when I was reporting to the media about the meeting of the Council of Ministers.
That very particular rebel camp that was dislodged by the SPLA, that camp is no more, correct?
In fact, these are new developments which are happening. The rebels, when they went for the disposition of their post, there was no mention of any camp inside central Equatoria, inside Equatoria or inside Bahr al-Ghazal. There had been no mention of such camps. But these are new camps which are happening due to there is a movement now out of UNMISS camp in Juba, and these are the people now trying to establish their presence so that they are recognized or considered by the SPLM-IO to be their forces. This is what is happening now. As you might have heard earlier, there is an influx of people outside the UNMISS camp. These are the very people who are causing us these problems now. These are the people we have been talking about. We have been saying that these people, they have firearms, inside UNMISS camp, and these are the people now coming out with their arms and attacking the civil population, attacking people wherever they are found.
The rebel officials are saying that their rebel forces were not part of the attack. So does that mean that these are people who want to be recognized?
In the first place, the rebels have no presence in Equatoria or in Barrelazal. Anybody found to be in these places and not declared by the rebels to be there, according to the disposition of forces, is a negative force.
So far, the president has ordered for new states to be created. Some people are saying that will undermine the implementation of the agreement signed between President Kiir and Riek Machar. Why will this go on?
The constitution is already amended. This is a popular demand, and this is why we have done it that way. There is no way you would talk to us of anything other than the 28 states. This is a popular demand, and the government responds to the demand of the people. It's not a question of us waiting for the rebels. Who's coming now is unknown.
So you don't think with this change in the constitution, amendment in the constitution, it will undermine the peace accord that is going to be implemented for the unity government?
It does not undermine the peace accord in any way.
Why do you say so?
I say so because we have not violated the agreement. We are already in the process of implementation, and in the course of doing that, we are now waiting for the advance team. The summit of heads of state and government was supposed to be held tomorrow, but the heads of state and government decided to call it off because they are busy in their own schedules. And as such, we are still waiting for these people to come.
Michael Makui is the South Sudanese Information Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Juba. Many of us leave our native countries for various reasons, but those who choose to stay in their adoptive countries send money to assist their families, and some give back to their communities. One is professor and educator Esther Okechukwu of Nigeria. She runs a center in Enugu to help girls without marketable skills. Viewers Esther Githui has more from Washington.
Professor Christiana Okechukwu teaches at Montgomery College in the U.S. state of Maryland. She is a Nigerian working in the U.S., but whose heart is in her native country. She runs the Inuele Center in Enugu to help young girls who leave school without marketable skills. But what motivated her to start the center?
I felt that if I empower one of them, it becomes a multiplier in effect. If it's within a family, that family will now start learning from one of them. Like the girl that's now a chemical engineer. She's been able to influence her other sisters to also toe the line and go to school.
Widowed early, she was left with three young children whose future she often worried about. She hoped if anything happened to her, others would step up and give her children an education. That worry was her wake-up call, which started the ball rolling.
When you have gotten your own skill, so that one, they are not forced to get into marriage too early and face violence against women. And I will tell you, the girls that started it, some of them now are chemical engineers.
At the Inuele Center, her focus has been on young girls, but young men are also showing up asking for training. She now holds what she calls yearly boot camps that last a month, where young people learn various skills that transform their lives.
We teach them horticulture, we teach them folktales, it's an intensive 1 month. They go through that 1 month, they're never the same again.
Okechukwu has a piece of advice for Africans living overseas who very often send money through MoneyGram or Western Union to their families back home.
There's a material things that we fade. Any clothes you buy this year, by next 2 years, is out of fashion. But then if you help these children to have education, then they will be able to buy their own clothes.
Professor Okechukwu has also written several books and refers to her Inuele Center as Little America that she has taken back to the village in Nigeria, where time is utilized the way it should and where teachers and students are held accountable.
If you help these children to have education, even an armed robber cannot take it from your brain.
And through the Inuele Center, Professor Okechukwu is building her community in her birth country of Nigeria and wants other Africans living abroad to make a difference by giving back as well.
That was VOA's Esther Githui reporting from Washington. The Zimbabwean Ministry of Education recently reported an alarming number of school dropouts in the country as parents struggle to raise fees due to poverty. But in remote Binga Matabeleland North, parents say it is not only about school fees, it's also about hunger that has forced the majority of school-aged children to drop out of school. For VOA, Patricia Mudadigwa of the Zimbabwe Service has more.
Speaking in Mchesu, which is about 80 kilometers from Binga town, parents say the current drought that the area is experiencing has forced their children to stay at home. Poverty is written all over the area, with many parents lamenting their situation. They are all looking up to the skies, hoping the heavens will break and bring them the much-needed rains. Aida Sibanda, who has two school-going children who had to travel about 7 kilometers to get to school, said she was forced to stop them from attending classes at Mcheso Primary School as they had no energy to walk back and forth and participate in classes.
Yeah, at Binga, we've got a big problem of drought. We don't have food. Children are not going to school just because of hunger. So the causes of hunger is that last year rain was not many. So the sun heated the crops, so we didn't manage to get more food for supporting our children.
Another villager, Mrs. Mulea, told Studio 7 that because of their desperate situation, they are appealing to humanitarian organizations who hardly assist this area to intervene and save their lives.
There was a shortage of rainfall. This causes the crops to die. So children, they are not going to school because of hunger. So we are asking for help so that children will go to school to learn.
Nyoni Mwembwe told Studio 7 that besides the shortage of food, sources of water drying up in the area, with villagers being forced to share the few sources of water with their animals. Most are traveling long distances to fetch water. According to a report published in July 2015 by the Zimbabwe Vulnerability Assessment Committee, some 1.5 million, 16% of the rural population, who have insufficient means to meet their minimum food needs during the 2015-2016 lean season. It is highly unlikely that the cash-strapped Harare will be able to feed all hungry Zimbabweans as had been promised earlier in the year. Most rural communities in the country are looking up to non-governmental organizations for food aid. Reporting in Binga, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
Drought-stricken Ethiopia has started distributing food aid and is urgently in need of $250 million in assistance to help relieve critical problems caused by the lack of rain. More than three decades after drought parched the country so badly that hundreds of thousands of people died, climate issues are a sensitive and important issue in the capital, Addis Ababa. For VOA, Martha Vanderwolf examines what can be done to help Ethiopia better survive climate fluctuations.
Drought has ruined this year's harvest for many Ethiopian farmers. In a country where 85% of the people are farmers, millions are in need of aid. The government has purchased nearly 1 million metric tons of wheat at a cost of about $280 million to get through the next 3 to 4 months. Government spokesman Getachew Reda says the government is in control of the ongoing crisis, but is also focused on measures that will reduce the impact of future droughts.
From a strategic point of view, the government will continue to further enhance its efforts to develop underground water resources and develop irrigation mechanisms which do not have to depend on the vagaries of weather.
Experts believe the reduction in rainfall is due to the El Nino weather phenomenon. While cycles of drought are expected every 10 to 12 years, the frequency of droughts and erratic rainfalls are expected to increase due to global climate change. Wagayu Hubekele is the climate director at Ethiopia's Agricultural Transformation Agency. He says a priority is getting better information to farmers so they can adjust their schedules.
Farmers have traditional wisdom. They know when to sow, where they know when to harvest, when to cultivate. But the problem now is that traditional wisdom is not working anymore. Problem is, even if the rain starts early, they don't start sowing or planting. Why? It is not normal time to plant.
Modernizing traditional practices is part of a short-term solution. Wagayahu believes that focusing on sustainable ways of farming is just as important. Agriculture makes up almost half of Ethiopia's gross domestic product. The lack of rain has severely affected the lowlands and livestock. Araya Asfaw is the director of the Horn of Africa Regional Environment Center and Network. He says not enough information about the effect of climate change on Africa is available.
The model for Africa is not as good because we don't have enough data, meteorological data, to predict what will happen. That's why now we need to have more meteorological stations all over the place.
Drought and hunger have been sensitive topics in Ethiopia since the infamous famine in the early 1980s that killed over 400,000 people. The government says the current drought has not killed anyone yet, but around 8 million people need assistance. The United Nations estimates that number will nearly double in the coming months. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Two distinguished Americans who made their mark in World War II recently came to New York, former Tuskegee Airman Roscoe Brown and pilot and television producer Norman Lear. Their meeting in New York is not the first time their lives have crossed. For VOA, Bernard Schussman reports from New York.
A bombing raid over Germany. Alongside the bombers were fighter escorts that allowed the mission to be a success. This World War II scene had become routine for two very accomplished 93-year-old men.
I see the guy with the cap on. So.
Acclaimed TV writer Norman Lear was the gunner on a B-17 for 52 combat missions over Germany. His protector, then fighter pilot, now educator, Roscoe Brown, was one of the original Tuskegee Airmen, the popular name for a group of African-American military pilots who fought in World War II.
You make the world better.
They had never met before, but seemed like lifelong friends. Brown said he had escorted Lear's bombing group on a raid over Berlin and knocked a much faster German jet out of the sky.
As I got close to Berlin, I saw this jet streaking up. And that's when I said, drop your fuel tanks and follow me. And the jets were coming up here. I was up here. I turned down, came down under the bombers, turned into the jet, into his blind spot, used my K-14 gun sight, which was an electronic gun sight that put a circle around the target. Hit the trigger, boom, blew up the jet.
Lear said the mission took 16 hours from Italy to Berlin and then back to Italy. It was considered the longest mission in the European theater of war.
A reasonable amount of fighters and flak, and that's why there's more than a reasonable amount of gratitude for the Tuskegee guys who flew our escorts so often.
Brown says the Tuskegee Airmen's role in World War II shattered myths about black Americans.
The stereotype was that African Americans didn't have the intelligence, the courage, the leadership ability to fly airplanes and be fighter pilots. And we certainly destroyed that myth.
Lear, creator of numerous iconic American television shows, was visibly moved to be finally meeting a man who may have saved his and his crew's lives many times over.
He was our escort, which is to say he was our lifesaver in cases, flying to protect the bombers, and that we would meet 70 years later.
Bernard Chessman, VOA News, New York.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, right here in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Segun Adeyemi from the Nigerian commercial capital, Lagos, and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN and the Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's go to Lagos, Nigeria, and join Segun Adeyemi. Good evening, Segun.
Good evening, Peter, and good evening, Africa. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports for Sunday, November 22nd. Visiting Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia scored 4 minutes from time to hold host Orlando Pirates of South Africa to a 1-1 draw in the first leg, final match of the 2015 CAF Confederation Cup on Saturday. Samsanga Gabuza had put the South Africans ahead in the 36th minute. With the away goal, Tunisia holds a narrow advantage going into the return leg, which will be the decider in Sousse, Tunisia, next Sunday. Turning to athletics, Tamirat Tola ran away from a strong field to win the 15th Great Ethiopian Run, one of Africa's biggest road races, today, Sunday. The 24-year-old from the Oromia Police Club won the 10-kilometer race in 28 minutes and 45 seconds. Bonsa Dida was second in 28 minutes and 51 seconds, while Adugna Takele, a clubmate of Tola, was third in 28 minutes and 55 seconds. The women's race saw Mamitu Daska put almost a minute between herself and her nearest rivals before crossing the line in 32 minutes and 17 seconds. The Great Ethiopian Run returned to the historic Meskel Square for the first time in 3 years and was billed as Haile Gebrselassie's farewell race. Gebrselassie fired the starter's pistol before jumping into the race to mark a symbolic end to his great running career. He later presented the awards with other leading Ethiopian athletes such as Tirunesh Dibaba and Genzibe Dibaba, who were also present for this carnival-like event. Gebrselassie is one of the founders of the Great Ethiopian Run. Reporter Eskinder Ferry talked with Gebrselassie's longtime manager before the race.
Hello, I'm Jos Hermans. I met Haile Gebrselassie when he was 17 years old in 1991. And since then, we worked together as a manager, coach, friend, and we will be friends forever.
What is the most unforgettable moment in Haile's athletics life for you, especially?
Oh, there's too many unforgettable moments, fantastic moments of winning races, his first world record in the 5,000 meters in Hengelo in my country. Then another one, he broke the world record 5,000 meters in Zurich with 11 seconds, amazingly. It's nearly 1 second per lap. Of course, everybody talks about 2000 Olympics in Sydney, where he won from Paul Thacker. The amazing thing about that performance is that he was injured already several months. He was not training completely. Actually, we had already an appointment in Finland to go to a doctor to have an operation for his tendon. He still decided to go to run for his country, and he was winning that race not only on his talents as a runner, but also especially on how strong his mind was. And another fantastic race for me was when he was breaking the world record in the marathon in 2:03:59.
Are you surprised that he decided to stop running at this time?
Yes, I know. Yes, it's time because he gets older. It's more difficult. The body is not that young anymore. No, because he loves running. He will run forever. And it was always difficult to pin him down about saying goodbye.
That was Jos Hermans, longtime manager of Ethiopian running legend Haile Gebrselassie. Back to football news. The draw for the final round of the African qualifying tournament for the 2018 World Cup in Russia is to be made on June 24th, 2016. The 20 teams that have reached the final stage of the qualifying will be divided into 5 groups of 4 teams each. The final group winners will advance to the World Cup in Russia. Staying with football news, the 2015 CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup kicked off on Saturday in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, with 2 games in Groups A and B. Both matches ended with lone goal victories. In Group A, host Ethiopia lost 1-0 to Rwanda. And in Group B, Burundi beat Zanzibar 1-0. The tournament was initially scheduled to be held in Rwanda. However, in June 2015, it was announced that Ethiopia replaced Rwanda as host due to Rwanda's preparation to host the 2016 African Nations Championship. Meanwhile, Sudanese Mutasim Gafar has been elected the president of SECAFA. He was elected during the regional body's election in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, on Friday. Mutasim, also president of the Sudan Football Association, got 6 votes out of 10 to beat closest contender Lawrence Mulindwa from Uganda, who garnered 3 votes. That ends it for this weekend's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Segun Adeyemi in Lagos. Now, sending it back to Peter Klote in Washington.
Thanks a lot, Segun. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sport, Nightline Africa Sports.
This girl is beautiful. She's beautiful.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
My girl, she's bad, she's number one. I've never seen a girl like you.
That girl, I tell you, she be time bomb. Boom. Don't stop, boogie, baby, wine on. Hey, your body, they define her. Yeah. This guy in boogie, no be minor.
No,
no, this body be designer. Some girl fine, but you fine her.
See?
Continue to wine up. Cause me never seen a girl like you.
Never let go wine.
Time bomb.
My body fire.
Time bomb.
She my desire.
Time
time bomb.
She make me lose control. Explosion.
She sexy but sexy Nina.
Time bomb.
She came with her friend called Sabrina.
Time bomb.
Don't stop sister Nina.
Time bomb.
Baby go low.
I just wanna love you. Share with me your problems. Girl, you are the type of girl a bad man need. I just wanna love you. Share with me your problems. Girl, you are the type of girl a bad man feel. Lean on me. My girl, you are the only one for me. You're the only thing I see. Lean on me. I am the only.
Overload, type of bumper with black road. Just the sight of bumper make me feel so good. My soul food, me some of the drumming walk out there. Gas, gas, mogu. I make serious, I know they joke. You make man confused, I know you cope. The machine above me to a means some of hey, no between us.
No.
I go direct, make she see, say I mean up. Some romantic arena. I wanna take her to a place where the passion is
green. Time
bomb.
A body fire.
Time bomb.
She my desire.
Time
she make
bomb.
Me lose control.
Explosion.
Bring sexy back, sexy Nina.
Time bomb.
She came with her friend called Sabrina.
Time bomb.
Don't stop sister Nina.
Time bomb.
Baby go low.
Explosion.
Let her wine.
Time bomb.
Her body fire.
Time bomb.
She my desire.
Time
she
bomb.
She make me lose control.
Explosion.
Bring sexy back, sexy Nina.
Time bomb.
She came with her friend called Sabrina.
Time bomb.
Don't stop sister Nina.
Time bomb.
Baby go low.
Be your number one fan and I dig by do your show. The things where you did display makes me wanna spend my dough. When you take it fast, when you take it slow. Baby, you're the baddest and I hope you know. I know you're upcoming and I know you blow. Can't you see in the dark you glow? Make you no change cause I love you so. Can't nobody do me better, 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 better than you. Can't nobody love me better, 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 better than you. This one don't be joke, oh. You didn't make me call, oh, yeah. Where the fast or slow mo, shawty, let me see you. Take it down low, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down low, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down low, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down low, rock, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Now you, I come see. I want you to take good care. Me, I did like your ways. Now your body and your perfection. Now you didn't make me crazy. Cause I'm loving the things that you wear. Girl, you got a good taste. There's nowhere else I'd rather be than at your place, yeah. Can't nobody do me better, 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 better than you. Can't nobody love me better, 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 better than you. This one don't be joke, oh. You didn't make me call, oh. Let the fast or slow mo, shawty, let me see you. Take it down low, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down low, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down low, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down low, rock, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Now you, I come see. I want you to take good care.
Make a man hard, but
buddy, no be wood. I be hearing stories about how you doing it good. Your sexy moves turn me on, I'm in the mood. I would take you home and make you mine if I could. Let's get faded and lost in the moment. If this you got up for buddy, I swear I wanna own it. You make me wanna spray this cash when you roll it. Pause, now let me remote control it.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Good evening, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. The hotel hostage taking in Bamako, Mali, which resulted in the death of about 20 individuals, according to the United Nations, is a further call up that the world should focus its attention on the global fight against terrorism. Regrettably, the media, particularly the Western media, have been focusing mainly on the events in Paris and its impact on the neighboring city of Brussels. In North America, we have politicians who are exploiting the understandable fears of the people about acts of terrorism to make pronouncements that actually heighten the concerns of the people and make statements that have serious implications for human rights of peoples. China has also raised concern about neglect of terrorism in China. The people of Beirut have expressed similar concern that the recent incident in Beirut, when there was terrorism, is being neglected by the global media. Last Friday, the Security Council, which is actually the mechanism to tackle global terrorism, adopted a resolution unanimously calling on member states who are in position to do so to band together to fight ISIS. Again, the focus is on ISIS and its impact on Europe and possibly impact in North America. At the same time, we have had many incidents of terrorism in Nigeria. Boko Haram is still perpetrating very serious acts of terrorism. These are only adding blips in the media of the Western countries. And it is necessary that we understand that unless terrorism is tackled globally, it will be very difficult to resolve it in the areas now of concentration. In fact, just last week, a major research project was published. It found that in 2014, Boko Haram committed far more terrorist acts and killed far more people than ISIS. So we cannot look away from what Africa is undergoing. Of course, Africa has to do its own part. I believe that the African Union should realize that information has become a weapon. It is important and vital that the AU begin to consider seriously how best the organization should mobilize African countries to come out with their own outlet to inform the world of African concerns. Years ago, Umbo, who was then the head of UNESCO, discussed this matter. But he was kicked out of his job because there was a fear. He was trying to manage information. So the world must now also look at Africa and other parts of the world, because Africa cannot go on with so many people being killed by suicide bombers, and yet there is no concerted effort to battle this incident globally. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, sports editor Segun Ademi, and our engineer for today, Bill Barber, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, if you close your eyes because of the bad people around you, then you will not see the good people passing by. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States will not close its doors to refugees who are fleeing the violence in war-torn Syria. After reports that one of the ISIL terrorists involved in the Paris attacks on November 13th had entered Europe by posing as a refugee, new questions have arisen about the policy of admitting a portion of the Syrian refugee population into the United States. The United States had agreed to accept 10,000 Syrian refugees in fiscal year 2016, which began October 1st. At a press conference in Turkey following the G20 summit, President Obama said slamming the door in their faces would be a betrayal of our values.
The people who are fleeing Syria are the most harmed by terrorism. They are the most vulnerable as a consequence of civil war and strife. They are parents, they are children, they are orphans. And it is very important, and I was glad to see that this was affirmed again and again by the G20, that we do not close our hearts to these victims of such violence and somehow start equating the issue of refugees with the issue of terrorism.
President Obama noted that countries like Turkey, Lebanon, and Jordan have already played an extraordinary role in accepting so many Syrian refugees, and that Europe's resources are now also under great strain dealing with the recent influx. The United States must step up and do its part, Mr. Obama said, and must do so while ensuring the safety of the American people by subjecting the refugees to rigorous screening and security checks. President Obama strongly rejected the idea that the United States should accept only Christians and not Muslim refugees from Syria. We don't have religious tests for our compassion, he said. That's not American. It's not who we are. The values that we're fighting against ISIL for are precisely that we don't discriminate against people because of their faith, said President Obama. We are a nation of many peoples of different faiths, which means that we show compassion to everybody. Those are the universal values we stand for.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.